And here we are at episode 219.
219, which is evenly divisible by 1373 and 219.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website where you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
Happy Valentine's Day. This is the podcast for February 14th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Bob Corker School of Labor Relations, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. And oh my goodness, happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Happy Valentine's Day. And Bob Corker, we're going to start with him.
Oh my.
Even when the company says, oh no, we're fine with a union shop and we're going to have it be kind of a committee like we do in Germany.
Uh-huh.
Where in Germany, they have had great success with
work councils.
Putting workers and management together in a room and having them manage the workflow. Because it turns out employees actually have an investment in making sure that the plant succeeds.
Yes, long term, that they would like to have, they'd like to work there, they'd like their kids to work there.
Yeah.
And so there's this thing called the Works Council, which is wired way into German culture and law that Bob Corker has a real problem with.
Well, because the people who pay Bob Corker to be a senator.
Yes.
Are terrified that, you know, the only thing that has brought jobs to the South in their estimation is, we ain't got unions.
Uh-huh.
We don't have to deal with unions. We just, you know, screw the work. We don't have unions.
Well, and this has been widely reported, so this is probably not going to come as a big surprise to our listeners, that we have a company that is pro-union and pro-work council. We have a union that's pro-union, and we have the private market that says, let them alone. Let them do their thing.
Yeah.
And now we have big government.
That's what libertarians wanted. Let businesses go ahead and run their business.
And we have big government Bob Corker
coming
sticking his bazoo into the middle of it, saying, no. Unions are bad because they might spread. Other companies might want unions too. And the thing that makes this so perfect, the thing you will not hear any place else but the Professional Left podcast, is the actual history of work councils and why they exist in the first place. Which is why I asked the question, is Bob Corker objectively pro-Nazi? I'm driving a big old Volkswagen Jetta right across Godwin's Law.
Yeah.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm saying this because the literal fact is that work councils in Germany date back to to 1920, when I can't possibly pronounce the long German word, but it was passed mandating consultative bodies for workers in businesses with over 20 employees. This is in 1920. Social and economic interests of workers were to be represented and considered to the management.
Mm-hmm.
A cooperative effort. We're all in this together. It lets you plan for the workflow. It lets you plan to not lay people off in the future. It is a much more cooperative approach to the idea of everybody gets wealthy, everybody prospers.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the American thing.
Mm-hmm.
They were abolished in Germany because of the fucking Nazis.
Hitler.
It was Hitler who came in.
It was Hitler.
And wiped them out in 1933.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler was the guy who got rid of work councils in Germany. When did they come back? Funny you should ask.
Let me think. Let me guess.
Yeah.
Let me guess.
Yeah.
Marshall Plan?
Yes. Yes. It was called the Allied Control Council. So let's sum up here. Those in favor of work councils are Volkswagen, the UAW, most of modern Western civilization, and those brave liberty-loving American heroes who fought to free the world from Nazi tyranny.
Wall Street.
And in the end, yeah.
Because they're profitable.
Yes.
Yes.
And who's against work councils?
Bob Corker and Hitler.
Bob Corker, the Republican leadership of Tennessee, the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, another wingnut welfare front group, and Hitler. So which side are you on, people? I thought that was a nice little addition, a little history lesson for today.
Hilarious. All right.
Yeah. And you know, I know this, Blue Gal? Because I love manufacturing.
You do.
And the whole idea of people, of a growing, prospering, booming middle class gives me enormous hope for the future if we can just get the clowns out of the way who don't want us to do that.
Yep. I want to talk about abortion for just a minute because I had a very good laugh when I read The New Yorker this week.
You laughed at an abortion? What sort of monster are you, Blue Gal?
I laughed at an article on abortion because everything I've been saying about abortion on the podcast – it's suddenly coming true. And this usually doesn't happen to me. This always Driftglass who, you know, gets his predictions out there in the air.
We'll talk about Chris Matthews later, but now.
But right now.
The New Yorker.
The New Yorker. Margaret Talbot has an article called Reading the Numbers, and it's available online. But it turns out, Driftglass, that the abortion rate is dropping.
You're kidding. Because of Jesus?
No, and not because of all these hundreds of Republican laws that are restricting access to abortion either. That's not reducing abortion at all, it turns out.
Weird, isn't it?
People are getting on an airplane and going where they can get an abortion if they need one.
Yeah,
it turns out that what is happening is Obamacare and other state programs are giving women, young women of reproductive age, access to something called a doctor.
I've heard of them.
The doctor recognizes, most doctors recognize, certainly my pediatricians have recognized how important it is to have the conversation with women of reproductive age, and unfortunately that's turning out to be 14 and above.
That's true.
About would you like to get pregnant in the next year? Do you want to be pregnant? Are you sexually active? What is your desire for pregnancy? Do you want to be pregnant? And, you know, a young woman can say, yes, I'm trying to get pregnant with my husband, or I'm trying to get pregnant with my partner, and so forth, and great, we'll help you with that. But if the woman says, no, I plan to go to college and I don't want to be pregnant for 5 years, they are suggesting to these women that they get an IUD.
Yes.
Which prevents pregnancy really, really well.
See, up until now, I had thought doctor was just a role Kevin McCarthy played in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But it turns out they're real people who offer sound advice for your future and your health.
Well, and they recognize something that the Republican Party, doctors recognize something that people like, you know, Mike Huckabee and Rand Paul do not recognize. Mike Huckabee seems to think that having reproductive rights patronizes women.
Yes.
And Republicans, this is what Huckabee said, Republicans want women to be, quote, something other than victims of their gender.
Yes.
You know what makes a woman not a victim of her gender?
Let me guess.
Birth control.
Yeah, golly. Being able to say, no, I'm not going to have a child now. I'm going to plan to have a child when I choose to, when I and my partner or just me choose to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it seems like all over the world, actually, the more women are treated with respect, equality, have more power, it seems like those civilizations do better. Those cities do better. Those cultures do better. And the children are raised more sort of not like a work a press gang, but actually they get better. Women are empowered, things get better.
Abortion drops. It turns out that women don't like using abortion as birth control.
No.
It's inconvenient.
No.
So this is a good thing, and this is being made possible, thank you very much, Barack Obama, by the Affordable Care Act, in large part. There are other family planning programs that are available now, but it turns out that when you make it doctors accessible and birth control both affordable and in the case of IUDs, and I'm not advocating IUDs for everybody. I'm not a doctor. That's not my goal. But IUDs have been improved dramatically since the days of the 70s when there were problems with them.
Well, they were made out of wood, let's face it.
No, they were made out of copper, actually.
Yeah, they were incredibly damaging.
You know, plastic is better. And you don't have to take it every day. You don't have to remember to take it.
Right.
You don't the errors involved. Human error is largely removed from the process, and that makes it women who have chosen not to get pregnant for many, many months. This is a good system for them.
You know what other social problems have been improved by proper education and access to information and healthcare?
Erectile dysfunction.
All of them. We smoke less cigarettes now. Yeah. I'm not equating abortion to cigarettes in any way. I'm saying we smoke less cigarettes now because people have access to information, to medical information, to medical advice about what they should and should not do with their bodies and the consequences of doing those things. We have more education about drunk driving. We have more public education on all sorts of things. And it would seem that with that long track record of successful public education, that the idea that you would want to provide excellent education on birth control to both men and women, and access to professionals.
Not men, honey.
No, because penis pumps.
That's the point. The point is, and that's the other half of this story, which is Medicare has been spending lots of money on penis pumps, it turns out.
I bet you didn't know that.
Because it turns out that's the case.
There's no national organized movement to make that an outrage. There's no. I don't remember the 48 or 52 or 7,300 votes in Congress.
Cutting penis pumps out of the budget.
I don't remember people trying to attach riders to everything to defund the penis pump portion of the law.
Well, and Bill Maher had on his show last week, you know, not only is it penis pumps for the old people in the Medicare funding stream, but VD, and that doesn't mean Valentine's Day. Sexually transmitted diseases, they call them these days. I'm showing my age. Among the elderly.
Yeah.
Rampant.
Yeah, because of toilet seats, right?
No.
No?
Because they're hopping from bed to bed.
Oh.
And they're not using birth control because they're...
Because why?
Because they don't get pregnant. They're old.
Exactly.
So... But it turns out you can still get chlamydia. So, and the penis pump is helping that right along. So,
I don't remember any groups of people with... signs.
Right. Marching outside the penis pump factory.
No, going, God made it limp for a reason.
Exactly. God made it limp for a reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to get to listeners' letters in just a moment.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we love, Rick Glass and I love, is that we're living through a golden age of television and on-demand viewing.
We are. We are.
And
it's true.
We love that because Sunday nights are very difficult in our house.
We have a lot
Walking Dead, True Detective, and Downton Abbey are all on at the same time.
Yes.
Here in our viewing area. So Walking Dead wins.
It wins
the live view because right after that there's a live show called Talking Dead.
Yes.
Like to watch that too.
Which is really good.
Yeah.
Chris Hardwick.
We love Chris Hardwick.
It is quite remarkable the amount of and we don't watch it because there are, you know, a million other things to do with our day and time, but House of Cards, I understand, is very good.
Yep.
And
that's going to start up again tonight, I think.
I don't recall the last program I watched on network television.
Right.
I never watched The Tonight Show. I would occasionally watch. But my personal media consumption habits have changed so radically.
And I think everyone's have. Yeah.
And almost without noticing.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, you know, there's just this. And the reason is you and I have pursued quality.
And most people are. I mean, a lot of people are pursuing what they want to watch when they want to watch it. And they assume that that's the way it should and ought to be. And when you have three kids running around having the zombie show on.
Yeah.
Actually, I think you and I are much more cautious about.
Yes.
True Detective.
Yes.
Than we are about Walking Dead.
We will.
True Detective is.
Yeah.
Deep.
True Detective is too real.
Yeah. Yeah.
And too kind of
Walking Dead
sobering.
If a child walks in and we're watching Walking Dead, it's a monster movie.
Yeah.
And it's for grown-ups.
And we kick them out.
Yeah. We kick them out. You're not allowed to watch this monster movie, but they're not seeing a dead girl tied to a tree. You know.
And I have my own personal hope. I'm past the time when I could do this for a living, probably. But I have great hope for the next generation of writers will have amazing new venues for writing all kinds of cool things that would never have found a home on network television. Mm-hmm. I mean, HBO does that and AMC does that. And now Netflix is doing that.
The change, too, has come with the change in technology.
It has, yeah.
That writers become directors and producers.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's happened to us with this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Frankly. So
one of the things I'm grateful for is that David Brooks is back from book leave. Charles Pierce and I exchanged some tweets last night, because there's this lecture. You hit me to this lecture that David Brooks is giving in New York on God, morality, and something else. Because who better to speak on God, morality, and whatever than David Brooks?
Right.
So I tweeted out, you know, tickets are available. And I got a tweet back immediately from Charlie Pierce saying, you and me, whiskey,
Well, we should thank Charlie Pierce also for his very kind message to you
about
the New York Times and the New York Times editorial board. Was that before last week's podcast, or did we mention that last week?
I don't remember. I don't know that we mentioned it last week. I think we did. It was about mostly about
Tom Friedman. You to feast on this.
Yeah, he said if ever God had given someone a feast.
Yeah, it's you moment with the New York Times editorial board fighting amongst themselves about just how stupid is the mustache of understanding.
Yeah. Well, and this just a little backstory. This was the on condition of anonymity. People who had worked at or were working at the New York Times talking out of school about how they, being perceptive, sort of real journalists, I suppose, could perceive of the fact that the editorial side of the house, the op-ed side, the Tom Friedman, David Brooks world, is so over-resourced, over-privileged, protected from all the economic vicissitudes that visit everyone else, just completely insulated, and they're fucking morons. Mm-hmm. And there's just incredible frustration that yes, we know they're idiots. We absolutely know they're idiots. They're wrong about everything. They've been wrong about everything forever. And for some fucking reason, they're untouchable. And it drives us crazy too. And the idea that would come from inside the house was just delightful, because it really did validate everything I have believed about David Brooks going back 20 years, and certainly everything I've been writing about him going back almost 10 years, and Tom Friedman as well. These are just clueless, privileged douchebags who have their jobs because they're friends with the editor, because they're pals with the person on top. And I truly believe that David Brooks was not beat up in this column because he strikes me as a sort of solicitous guy who will bring people coffee.
Yep.
Doesn't behave like a dick around his coworkers.
Sends birthday cards.
Yeah. He's smart enough to know that he is very lucky to have this job.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Tom Friedman is sort of fuck you. I'll be in wherever.
Dubai. Yes.
Golfing with
interviewing cab drivers and phoning
and I'll interview
it in.
A cab driver on the way back for my column.
Well, and a lot of people said, you know, he's a travel writer and he's a bad travel writer because he gets in the cab and talks to the cab driver and then writes down what the cab driver says.
But there was a column this week by Mr. Brooks who just, you know, this is a guy who has, as I said, supped lavishly on every bad Republican idea, every crackpot tax scheme that he said would never cause a deficit that did cause a deficit, every stupid Bush idea, every bad war, every opportunity the right has taken to piss money away and break the country for the last 20 years. David Brooks has been on board with that idea. And now that he's living in the ruins of his own party and movement's incredibly bad ideas, he wrote this column about he has no idea why things are all messed up and shit. Just people seem to have lost hope with the future, and we don't know why. It's so confusing. It's so weird that this fundamental American trait of energetic hopefulness about the future seems to be lost on a generation of young people that basically my friends have looted and left behind.
Yeah.
And he can't figure it. So his idea is to give travel vouchers to those kids and have them go someplace that has jobs. That's it. But it's this befuddled column, like, I have no idea why all this shit's broken. I have no idea. The arsonist standing there with the lighter in one hand and the gas can in the other, explaining he has no fucking idea how the fire started. And so
the idea is to fly everyone to North Dakota so they can join the fracking revolution.
Yes,
is that it?
Yes. It was such a sort of little gem of David Brooks' cluelessness, trolling, and insularity. He clearly does not have any exposure to normal humans at all.
Yeah.
And but he's back from book leave, which means I have material. Charlie Pierce has material. Bless him, Matt Taibbi has material.
Yeah.
And I would also urge you to go check out my blog, only because I stole from Crooks and Liars and reposted that wonderful exchange between David Gergen and Matt Taibbi.
Oh, yeah.
Which was just priceless. It's not my
right. About the Tea Party.
I won't say any more.
It's worth reading because it is so prescient. Yep.
And because
what's going on with the debt ceiling and
the Republican Party.
The Republican Party falling apart at the seams because they know in this instance that their failure to govern will cost them.
And all of this inside stuff, all of Mitch McConnell being attacked by the Tea Party and John Boehner being attacked by the Tea Party.
And Ted Cruz causing trouble for Mitch McConnell in a big way.
And them saying internally to themselves, which is now being reported out, which again is delightful because you have disgruntled employees talking out of school about, oh, this email is probably from one of the crazy people.
Yeah.
Well, that
instantly, when a Republican in the House or Senate decides to govern, it is a fundraising opportunity for the Tea Party. To run against you. And I tweeted, and Joan Walsh retweeted yesterday, I tweeted to Joan Walsh that, you know, wouldn't it be funny if GOP incumbents had to undo Citizens United to save themselves, to save their own asses from the likes of the Citizens United brigade of teabaggers.
Mm-hmm. And the only
thing that's going to save you is campaign finance reform.
Yes, get them cut off their money.
Cut off their money.
And the only reason I bring it up is that now that internal dissent, now that the disgust and rage that you're getting from essentially the donor class Republicans, the people who were bought off and have been bought off for years, they're awful people, mind you. These are awful people. John Boehner's an awful person. Mitch McConnell's an awful person. But now they're bitching about being attacked by these crazy people. And the reason that I bring it up is Matt Taibbi
told David Gergen crazy
during the election. This was an election night review of what was going on. And Matt Taibbi told Gergen, they're crazy. I report on these people. They're crazy. And David Gergen shit himself. You know, that what an elitist attitude.
40% of the electorate is crazy. They're not crazy.
Yes, I can. And he said, they're not a fringe group. And Taibbi said, I'm not saying they're fringe. I'm not saying they're uneducated. I'm saying they're crazy.
They do not use fact in their reasoning process to vote for anything.
They vote based on
what Rush Limbaugh and Fox News tells them to vote.
David Gergen, who you might remember, used to be the David Brooks on the NewsHour.
NewsHour. And worked for Clinton. He was in the staff. He was in Clinton's staff.
Right? Well, he worked for Nixon, too. He worked for three or four presidents.
He's been in lots and lots of White Houses. Yeah.
And his claim to fame is being Mr. Centrist, being Mr. Reasonable Conservative. He just lashed Matt Taibbi for suggesting that these good salt of the earth Americans are in fact crazy. And you know what?
I've been to their conventions. I've talked to them. They're crazy.
And now, is it now 20 years short? Oh no, it's only 4 years later.
Four years later.
Guess who was right and guess who was wrong? And that, again, that's just another example of, you know what? We're getting kind of tired of being right all the time.
The ones that told you that this was going to happen.
And so let's move on from what we're bitching about. To what we're great.
Well, I just want to bring up also Nicole Wallace.
Yeah. Oh God.
You and I have begged and pleaded and wondered about the nighttime MSNBC hosts and how they do not cross the streams. They do not mention David Gregory. They do not mention Chuck Todd. They do not mention Joe Scarborough.
Nope.
They are two separate islands of coverage, and nobody insults the other. And you know, even when it's very clear that the daytime conservative wing, Wall Street wing of MSNBC is wrong a lot.
Yeah. Like every day for
like
3 hours.
Day.
Yeah.
No, you could. Anyway, you know, I try very hard not to make this the anti-David Brooks show and the anti-Joe Scarborough show, but we do mention them fairly often as being wrong. And Rachel Maddow does not bring that up. You know, she doesn't say, well, today, stupid ass Joe Scarborough opened his pie hole and said something really idiotic. Because she'd lose her job if she did that. And the reason it's
worth remarking on is the fact that Joe Scarborough is wrong in all the ways that most incite reporting on the Maddow show.
Right.
And he's not wrong about the weather, sports.
He is contradicted by Rachel Maddow's show on the facts.
Yes.
Very often.
He and David Gregory, not mentioned. They are the walking embodiments of everything that Maddow is against.
Right.
And yet they never talk about each other. And is stating, asking,
am I right about this to her guests? You know, did I get this right? Do I have facts right? If she has facts wrong, she says so. I got something wrong last night. I want to correct it.
So here comes
Nicole Wallace, who was the person on the McCain-Palin staff who ultimately did not vote for McCain-Palin because she just couldn't.
who went along with it.
Yep, but went along.
Totally went along with it. But at the end, she just...
And cashed her paychecks.
Yep.
But in the end, couldn't vote for Sarah Palin as vice president.
Okay. Now she writes fiction and talks about Republicans, a Republican Party that doesn't exist anywhere but hidden.
Well, and she and everyone else was giving Chris Christie a tongue bath. Everyone on Morning Joe was giving Chris Christie a tongue bath for having an appearance at an industrial trade show with the head of, I can't remember which company it was, but some CEO was interviewing him at a trade show, and he, you know, made a joke about the lane closing issue, and ha ha ha, yeah, I'm shocked that you would mention that, ha ha ha. And then Chris Christie said, you know, he started waxing philosophical about economics.
Yeah.
And income inequity, we don't want everyone to be equal, and just everyone has a mediocre salary. We want equality of opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is nothing
totally
that,
not what we're talking about.
or could possibly be interpreted that way, except deliberately misrepresenting what liberals have to say, which is sort of what they do all the time. So,
but Nicole Wallace thought that Chris Christie had a great day.
He did. So he had a great day.
So did Joe Scarborough. Sounded great. Sounded like a leader, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the person that wasn't going to drink the Kool-Aid on that this time,
oddly enough,
was Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
And Chuck Todd said, well, okay, I guess he had a good day. No one was indicted. Today. And Nicole Wallace lost her shit, started, oh my God, oh my God, I can't believe you, oh my God, and let loose and said, Rachel isn't on till 9.
Right. Right. Which you never do.
You never do.
Never do. Never cross. Never cross the streams.
And, you know, as I said, we have begged Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow to call out their colleagues, and knowing in our hearts that they won't do that because they appreciate their jobs at the network where they work.
Yes. And we have watched Rachel Maddow go on Meet the Press and very carefully navigate the minefield of not sticking a pencil into David Gregory's throat, which is hard to do when he stands for everything you think is wrong and bad about the world. And he's sitting right in front of you. So, but the idea that this little pinhole appeared between their universes, and of course it came from the Scarborough side because they're you know, they don't care. Why would they? But they really, I mean, clearly the contempt they have for those people, who are just such a bunch of, you know, liberal hacks and that is palpable. And
she should be in the Mark Halperin penalty box for that, in my personal opinion. If that is the standard I don't appreciate that standard. I think when you call the president a dick on national television, you should get more than 30 days off. But
yeah, you take a Bashir.
You take a Bashir, not a Mark Halperin.
You take an Olbermann. You take a Dylan Radigan.
See?
Yeah.
But Nicole,
a Phil
Wallace,
Donahue, if you will.
As of this recording, Nicole Wallace has not been suspended
for
saying Rachel isn't on till 9.
Yeah, and she won't be.
Okay.
Anyway.
We're going to get happy now.
Yeah.
And happy Valentine's Day, darling.
Happy Valentine's. Right now,
it's kind of an anniversary for us. We met, you know, I did the math. We met 6 years ago this weekend.
Met in person.
Met in face-to-face at a Shakespeare Sister meetup.
IRL.
In real life, at an Irish bar in Chicago.
In Evanston, actually.
Evanston, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it was very nice to meet you.
It was nice to meet you, too. Hello. We had corresponded before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had, you know, I knew him as a blogger, and he knew me as a blogger, and we were in chat room together at my salon. I had a weekly chat room salon.
Yeah.
So he knew I was getting a divorce, and he knew things were going, what my personal life was like, and we were friends. Mm-hmm. And you didn't leave my side that evening.
I
noticed that.
I felt you required some protection from me. A beaky.
Yeah. Well, and then the summer came and I was living in Illinois. And
suddenly
you came down to visit me. That was that. That was you decided you had to stake your claim kind of early.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I came down and tested out the kicked the tires on your house. And I, at that point, I had no intention of selling my condo, no intention of leaving Chicago.
Yep. No intention of marrying, really.
Ever again.
Ever again. And turned out things just unfolded, didn't they?
It did.
Blossomed.
It did. Yeah. And today we are sitting in the middle of a lovely blizzard in central Illinois.
At our house.
At our house.
Yeah, and
snow
we're married.
Covering everything with...
Yeah, 3 years this August will be our... We will have been married.
Yeah.
So,
and we've been podcasting longer than we've been married, which is...
We have been podcasting longer than we've been married.
Yes, so. Which is weird. But it's a nice day. It's cold and it's covered with snow and kids are in school and you know, all the usual problems of Americans living through what is still a crippling recession for most of us. But you know what? It's a good day. And
we asked people to write to us about what they're grateful for, what they love on Valentine's Day. And I'll start, if you don't mind.
Please.
With a lovely note that came with a contribution from GS from Michigan. Hi, GS from Michigan. On a long car trip a number of months ago, I listened to your podcast while my wife read. Barely 15 minutes into the show, my wife was asking if what the two of you were speaking about was true. Or simply for shocking purposes.
And we're not laughing at you.
No.
Because there are millions of people who pay no attention at all. That's fine.
No, just, to politics or to, you know, and that's their life. You know, they have other interests and that's fine. But
thank you for taking
it. She was genuinely asking. She wasn't being hostile.
Clearly. No, a good question. It's a really good question. Because
really
it sounds.
True. Did this really happen?
Because we sound crazy.
They just trying to shock us.
Yeah.
She was referencing the crazy shit you were discussing that the GOP was doing, saying, thinking. I told her that it was my experience with the professional left that the facts were not made up. Simply discussed. Since that podcast, she has paid more attention to our local government, the issues our area faces, as well as paying attention to the national politics. Mm-hmm. You two were able to get someone involved.
Aww.
My wife, with something she never cared for before. This is long overdue. I thank you for what you do. Thank you for your time and for the education and entertainment you provide each week. I wish you all the best and truly appreciate all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that made our whole week.
It really did.
Knowing that we made a difference in someone's life. And that's very special. Thank you.
She fell for it, honey.
All right. Why don't you read Alfred on Facebook?
Alfred on that website I never visit. but a lovely letter.
And he's got a little bit of a cynical twist here. We'll warn you. But
yeah.
Take it with a grain of salt. But here's Alfred.
I love Mitt Romney, his lovely wife, and five strappingly handsome sons. Not so much how they've lived like parasites, officiating the demise of the promise of millions of people they later feed upon like mannered vultures, or their tight-mouthed smiles if unavoidably introduced to the poor people whose homes and pockets they've ransacked and appropriated or sent overseas. But I love that they're absolutely the best of what they are. Persons of a caliber head and shoulders above the Cheneys and the Palins and the Cruises and Gohmerts and the Bachmans. Verily all Republicans, because the good ones tolerate the bad ones.
Isn't that the truth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They raise the bar for behavior otherwise scurrilous in aspect, cruel in prosecution, psychopathic in regard, and just plain mean, given they engineer the misery themselves out of the whole cloth of their total lack of empathy. They're the best at what they are and can be, to a degree. Love for that. Yep.
Very good.
They,
I love that. The good ones tolerate the bad ones. That's what's going on in the House of Representatives and the Senate.
That's what's going on.
Go ahead.
Please. No, go ahead.
Mitch McConnell won't just stand up and tell Ted Cruz to go to hell.
No, he can't.
Yeah.
He can't because he'd be eaten alive. Yep. For this exact – and this is – again, I'm beating that dead horse, but it is – I prefer to think I'm taking the horse into a parking garage in Chicago and shooting it because Valentine's Day, you know.
Yeah.
But for exactly the same reason that David Brooks and David Gregory and Mark Halperin still have jobs.
Yep.
They can't call out the bad people because what would happen? That would be the first domino that would end up knocking them off their perch. They can't very well say, hey, guess what? We've been lying to you all this time. We've been enabling the worst people in America by saying every time they do something bad, yeah, but liberals are worse. They can't say that shit. And that means they're trapped. So thank you for pointing that out.
Mark via email writes, Dear BG and DG, you know what I love? the return of the L word. Not the television show, but the word liberal.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, old friend. The days where being a liberal was viewed about as favorably as a person who hated puppies and grandmas is slowly going the way of the right-wing base to the grave. As self-serving and idiotic as their public policy is, the GOP is the Bobby Fischer of branding.
Huh.
They took a word to describe great men like Roosevelt and slowly and steadily over time repeatedly hit it with a hammer until even the left was so afraid of the word that they adopted the term progressive, further reinforcing the idea to those on the right and in the middle that the left had something to hide. But things are changing. I see my fellow lefties using the word liberal proudly. I see them challenging right-wing propaganda on Facebook and in conversation, whereas in the past they would sit idly by as the bullshit fountain continued to spew from their right-wing friends and acquaintances' mouths. I see them telling people what liberalism really is about, and that socialism is not a dirty word. But most of all, I love that tomorrow I will be waking up to a less conservative country than I did today. My only hope is to one day turn on Meet the Press and see a gigantic man from a liberal podcast telling David Brooks, Andrew Sullivan, Newt Gingrich, and Bill Kristol how they are the wooden horses of the right-wing media merry-go-round of hacks who were wrong about everything. Thanks so much for all you do.
Aww.
That's very nice. And we have a congressional candidate. First of all, can I just tell people about the bill that our congressman has introduced?
Oh, do you want, you might finish off with David on Facebook?
Okay, let's finish off with it. And then I want to talk about Rodney Davis.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
David on Facebook had a happy message.
David on Facebook. And we've gotten a lot of really nice messages. This is just sort of picked from the pile. I love that Elizabeth Warren is my senator, says David on Facebook. That even though I don't make much money, I can still help. I can still get help for my diabetes and depression. Moral Mondays.
Moral Mondays.
Hell yeah.
And the protests in North Carolina have been very heartening.
And there are millions of people who now have health care.
Yep.
Who didn't have health care a year ago.
We're almost there, Driftglass. I got
know.
A call back this week. Finally.
You did? Yeah.
From DHS.
Apparently,
sorry,
you have
we
to...
lost your paperwork. We've been kind of swamped.
Well, and just to be clear, my wife is meticulous about record keeping and makes copies of everything. So, as I said, one of the things that I'm grateful for that we are really lucky, I mean, just incredibly lucky, is that between us, we have immensely good coping skills for the Great Recession. I have I'm a little bit undercut by the fact that, in my opinion, I know way too much about labor markets and way too much about reemployment rates and way too much about what happens to people over a certain age.
And age discrimination,
statistically, to be, you know, to hold out any false hope about my personal future. But we really know how to navigate bureaucracies and know who to talk to. And when we go in, we talk to people as professionals.
Yeah. Yeah. And they appreciate that, too.
Yeah. And we as
every caseworker I talk to, I always leave them with the blessing of, may everyone you see today be as organized as I am. And they all roll their eyes. Oh, no, well, that's not going to happen.
And as I used to tell people back when I used to have dozens and dozens of people reporting to me over the years, make it easy for me to say yes, and I'll probably say yes.
Yeah.
Come to me ready, prepared, with everything filled out, everything ready to rock and roll. And all I have to do is check it and check off on it. And that's 90% of the battle.
Yep.
And so we go to, when we deal with bureaucracies, as we now must do a lot with, because we're one of the poors.
We're po.
We walk in ready to load it for bear, you know, figuratively load it for bear.
Yeah.
And so the fact that my wife put together an immense volume, a binder full of facts, if you will.
Yeah, it was for them a thick folder, which tells you something of documentation to get Medicaid. Yeah.
But it didn't make it past the front door.
Nope. And I walked it down there to get it date stamped in, and it got lost.
It got lost in that
really,
10 feet between the front desk and the place where it was supposed to go.
It was lost.
The one place we can't control.
Yeah.
The one place it went wrong.
Yep.
So, but I am extraordinary.
He found it. The caseworker found it and said that it's now in the pipeline, and he apologized. And I think that you and I also, because we know how these places work, and also, you know, they are now swamped with people that, frankly, are not used to dealing with that social services network because they weren't eligible for food stamps. The Medicaid expansion has made people who are, you know, earning $51,000 a year eligible for insurance and eligible for Medicaid.
Right.
In states where they have granted that. And that's the part that just disgusts me. But, you know, the idea that if you live in a red state, there should really be a court case about that. I'm sorry. I just think it's you, where you live should not determine whether you can get Medicaid, in my personal opinion.
Communist.
I know.
Uh-huh. But we're very.
But I want to talk about Rodney Davis, our congressman.
Yes.
Who is not the worst congressman, not the worst Republican in the Congress. I will say that.
No.
Wonkett gave him the they nominated him as a Congress taint. The reason he's not one of the worst congressmen is because his district is gerrymandered Democratic.
Yes.
And he won by the absolute skin of his teeth. There was a recount to get him into the House. And so he has to be on fairly good behavior most of the time in terms of not going full Louis Gohmert. He just can't do it. If he went full Louis Gohmert, he wouldn't get reelected.
I mean, well, and he has to be careful, and especially during primary.
Yeah.
Because it's a much different topography in a mixed district, which this is, than in a solidly red district where the further right you go, the further up you get.
He can't do that.
No.
But he sponsored a bill this week in response to that horrible uppity state dinner that that first family held with France.
Stephen Colbert, First Lady of France.
First Lady of France. Well, and you know, the response on the right has been with twitchy and her nine-page
appalling. Predictable, but appalling.
But, yeah. How dare she wear a designer dress?
Yeah.
How dare she not wear something from the Goodwill?
Yeah.
In this economy.
Yeah.
How dare they eat fancy food?
Yes.
With the at president
a state dinner when you're entertaining the president of France.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Rodney Davis has sponsored a bill saying that food at state dinners should meet the same standards as school lunches. Not making that up.
Yeah. And if he's talking about raising the standard of school lunches, I'm all for it. But I have a feeling he's
not.
The kids
won't eat that stuff.
Yeah. No. This is a what? A snail? Are you insane? Where's the friggin' pizza? So, yeah, but that's our congressman. And now
that's our congressman.
It's re-election
time. And to the earlier letter about the L word and liberal and progressive.
Yeah.
The person running, one of the people running against him, and there are a number of Democrats in the primary running against him, but one of them has a TV ad running where he says, "I'm not a politician. I'm a scientist."
Right.
I'm a scientist. And I'm a proud progressive.
Yeah.
I'm running for Congress to go to Congress to bring science.
Science.
Science and a proud progressive attitude to Congress, which is an absolute swipe at our former congressman.
Yeah.
John Shimkus, who, you know, went before the. He's on the energy subcommittee, one of the energy subcommittees, and he opened his Bible and said that since God sent the rainbow, the earth wasn't going to be destroyed.
Right. No climate change there.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about it because, you know, God said so in the Bible, in the Old Testament. And so we don't have to the coal companies can do whatever they want.
And he actually tripped and fell leaving the meeting, but was cushioned by the enormous bags of money the coal company give him every year to say.
Well, and the lack of gravity, let's face it. I mean, that's a myth too, right?
Yeah, gravity's a myth. That's just the man keeping you down.
You know how we know that?
Uh-huh.
Because in both the Old and New Testament, somebody ascended. So,
that's right.
You know,
Ezekiel. Ha, got you there.
You don't need it.
Uh-huh.
You know, either. All right. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Theodora.
Oh.
The owner of Theodora. That's not the right word.
No.
It's not the right
sponsor.
Word. The sponsor of Theodora, the person who sent Theodora to us, said, "I've tended to call her Theodora the Explorer, based on the TV show our granddaughter used to watch. More recently, though, I've started referring to her as Theodora Fulmina, alluding to a Latin word for lightning, because she's a kitten. She's only 9 months old or so and runs around a lot.
And she moves like the wind.
She does. And she's beautiful. And she, in this picture, she is actually sleeping on a quilt, which is what all of us should be doing in this weather. Yeah. Let me tell you, it's really bad here. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. We really do. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. And we do love our postal workers. They're getting the mail out every day in this weather.
Every day.
God bless them.
Yeah.
So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties want to know why it's winter every place but Sochi.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
With Science Fiction University, and these are just questions from a website called funtrivia.com. We have been sent some audio science fiction, and I have to produce it before we can run it. So we'll get to that.
I also have one bonus science fiction slash political thingy. Tom Perkins, the horrible hedge fund or billionaire. I don't know what his particular line of business is. I'm looking up now. The venture capitalist. Of course, he's a venture capitalist. He was the guy who a couple of weeks ago said that the attacks on Jews in the, during the Holocaust was pretty much the same as attacks on rich people in America. Now, his conclusion is that basically, if you pay a million in taxes, you should get 1 million votes.
Wow.
Because, of course, the only thing you should be measuring in terms of virtue or value in this country is money. But this guy just very seriously believes that first of all, unless you pay taxes, you should not be allowed to vote. And it, and your number of votes you get to cast is scaled through the amount of taxes you pay.
That's amazing.
But there is a name. There's a name for this kind of voting. Ad valorem voting.
Oh, yes.
It means according to value. You don't vote according to your status as a citizen. You vote according to how much money or value you have as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a little science fiction bonus, Tom Perkins' idea was originally floated in a little book I like to call The Space Merchants.
Yes, because that's the name of the book.
I'll read you one quick quote from it. He spoke of trouble with the senator from DuPont Chemicals with his 45 votes and of an easy triumph over the senator from Nash Kelvinator with his 6. So not only are our elected representatives in Fred Pohl's future corporations, they are corporations whose vote totals are based on their wealth, period. And that's how the world should be run. So,
Fascinating.
And we're there. We've arrived.
We're there. So here are some science fiction questions from funtrivia.com based on movies pre-2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, no.
All right. Number one. Huh? In The Incredible Shrinking Man, Grant Williams plays a man who mysteriously begins to get smaller.
Uh-huh.
What confirms his and his wife's fear that something is wrong?
It's either his pants or his wedding ring.
His wedding ring.
Yeah.
Wedding ring falls off his finger.
Which is something they used in Breaking Bad.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Getting smaller. Getting thinner.
Yep. Getting thinner. Your ring is loose. Yeah. What does Klaatu give Bobby as a type of currency in The Day the Earth Stood Still?
A diamond, I think.
High-grade diamonds. Very good.
Yeah.
Do you know who directed that movie?
No.
Robert Wise.
Oh, very well, and wonderful movie. The remake is terrible, but that's a wonderful movie.
The old one is wonderful. Yeah. What is Kevin McCarthy's profession in Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Oh, shoot. I can see them at a cocktail party. I can see them talking. Either newspaper editor or teacher.
He's a doctor.
Doctor. Oh, yeah, of course he is. Of course he is. He examines the bodies. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
One of the best British science fiction films is Quatermass and the Pit, also known as 5 Million Years to Earth.
Yes.
What planet were the unearthed aliens originally from?
Mars.
Yes, very good.
And it turns out we are the Martians.
Yep.
Very cool movie. That's a wonderful movie. You should really
see that. 5 million years to Earth. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's just very cool. Very, very cool.
Ray Harryhausen's special effects lifted Earth versus the Flying Saucer well above the mediocre but fun script. What American city is it mostly set in and mostly destroyed?
Oh, man. They like to destroy Los Angeles a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll guess Los Angeles.
Nope. Washington, D.C.
Okay. All right.
Now, here's an easy one for you. We all know Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet, but what 60s sci-fi TV show did he make an appearance on?
Oh, Lost in Space.
Yes.
A couple of times.
And Robbie also popped up on various other movies and TV shows.
Yeah, that's what robots were supposed to look like, damn it.
Right.
And sound like.
What was the name of the alien home planet in This Island Earth?
Oh. Do I get points for knowing that the machine is the Interocitor?
No.
Oh, okay. I have no idea. All I can think of is the MST3K version of that movie.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know.
Metaluma.
Metaluna.
Luma, L-U-M-A.
Metaluma. All right.
All right. In 1936's Things to Come, which is a wonderful movie.
Yes, also.
What year did the Great Plague occur that wipes out most of the people left after the wars?
Oh, 1962?
66.
66.
It was made in 36. The plagues come in 66. All right.
Yeah.
In one of the few 50s movies where aliens aren't the bad guys, see also The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
It came from outer space, had aliens that wanted to do what?
Make our penises larger?
No.
No.
Ray Bradbury, I don't think, wrote about penis enhancement, as far as I know.
They wanted to bring us single-payer health care.
No.
No. They wanted to save our environment.
No, they wanted to fix their spaceship and go home.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't here for us at all.
Right. In The Thing from Another World, 1951... What did the creature's metabolism most closely resemble?
Oh, metabolism? A jellyfish.
No, vegetable. I don't understand that one.
Okay.
Makes no sense. Do you know, the director was credited as Christian Nyby, N-Y-B-Y.
Uh-huh.
But most film historians think that the producer of the film had a hand in directing most of the scenes in The Thing from Another World. Do you know who that is?
Humphrey Bogart.
Howard Hawks.
Howard Hawks. Oh, that would be kind of awesome.
All right. Which director made 1966's Seconds, starring Rock Hudson? He's known for his intelligent thrillers.
Which director?
Mm-hmm.
Intelligent thrillers, 1960s.
He made a movie called Seconds.
Yeah.
Starring Rock Hudson.
Before we knew Rock Hudson was gay.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say the same person who did The Naked City.
Mm, I don't know.
But that's probably not the case.
John Frankenheimer.
Oh, okay. Very good. I will look up to see if John Frankenheimer ever guest directed a Naked City episode, in which case I will give myself partial credit for that.
There you go.
Blind shot in the dark that it was.
The chemical formula used to make Claude Rains invisible in 1933's The Invisible Man also causes him what?
To go mad.
That's right.
Mad, I tell you. It always does for some
reason.
Become
homicidally insane.
Because, you know, that would be, because it would be boring otherwise.
Yeah, right. What's the name of the hidden city that Ronald Coleman and his group find after their plane crash lands in Frank Capra's 1937 Lost Horizon?
Damn it. I actually do know this. It's not Xanadu.
It's like that. It's
Citizen Kane.
It's like Xanadu. It's Shangri-La.
It's Shangri-La. I was going to say, it kills me that that didn't come to my mind. I should have given myself another minute. Shangri-La. Sam Jaffe plays the High Lama.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful, again, a wonderful movie. You should go check it out. It's just terrific.
Horizon by Frank Capra. Yeah. All right. In 1954's Killers from Space. Killers from Space. What were the ping pong ball eyed aliens creating in order to destroy humanity?
Ooh, Republicans?
Close. Just kidding. Giant insects and lizards.
Oh, yeah. That seems like a very inefficient way of destroying humanity, but okay.
All right. And the bonus question. We all know that Starship Troopers and its variety of films was originally written by Robert Heinlein.
We all know that, yes.
We all know that. Everybody knows that.
Everybody take a drink, by the way.
What are, according to Wikipedia, the three other films based on the works of Robert Heinlein?
All right. Three other?
Three.
Three other. Destination Moon.
Correct.
The Puppet Masters.
Correct.
Which was also Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And it was, it was Ray Bradbury who did the script for Moby Dick, so that's not right. I don't know the third one.
The third one is The Brain Eaters, 1958 science fiction horror film about alien parasites who invade the small Illinois town of Riverdale.
Not Riverdale?
Yes, Riverdale.
Those Riverdalians get all the hard luck in the world.
And it is based on the Puppet Masters, so...
Well...
There you go. And it's uncredited. It's uncredited to Robert Heinlein. It's also uncredited to the co-producer, Roger Corman. And it's a very early Leonard Nimoy movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, brief appearance by Leonard Nimoy. So, that's what's
remarkable. Small world we live in.
That's right. Oh, and Heinlein sued for plagiarism.
Good for him.
He sued Gordon Urquhart. And he settled out of court for $5,000.
Good for him.
Yep.
Early, you know, we call that Ellison-esque these days.
Yes, we do.
By the way,
yes,
a writer to that statement, Harlan Ellison is not gratuitously prone to lawsuits. Yeah. He is a fanatic about protecting his work and the work of other writers, which I fully support and endorse.
Yes, absolutely. And to make sure the writer gets paid.
Yeah.
And I think he would do that for any writer if he saw that injustice happening.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was very big in the SFWA, Science Fiction Writers of America, until it became, I think I'm speaking a little bit anecdotally, it became clear that they couldn't get their shit together.
Yeah.
It was come to LA, learn the business, you will live like kings, you'll work 3 months a year, and you'll be able to do whatever you want the rest of the time. And a lot of the people that he talked to just couldn't get past that penny a word mentality mm-hmm. that kept them writing pulp their entire life. And he just had it with their sort of short... These are people who envision galactic empires and 5 million years in the future what humanity will look like, who can't get past their penny a word mentality. So I know that frustrated him an awful lot. All anyway, right. That was very good.
And that was very good.
Yeah.